This is Street Knowledge with Chris Graham.
Welcome to the podcast. Chris Graham going solo today. Going to try to track Scott German down tomorrow for our big debate on the designated hitter. Scott traveling today, so not able to get together for a podcast with Scott. But as we're recording this, it's close to 7 o'clock on Wednesday, and we're about an hour away from the first drop of the puck, Game 7 of the Eastern Conference Finals, Washington Capitals, Tampa Bay Lightning. So forgive me if I got one eye just on the fact there's a Game 7 for a spot in the Stanley Cup Finals that's got my attention there. But we'll talk a little bit about that. We'll talk some NFL with the latest in the anthem controversy generated, such as it is. And let's see what else we can get into. But let's start with the NFL and that anthem issue. The NFL owners voting today unanimously, one abstention, but unanimously otherwise, to institute a policy that will require all team personnel who are on the field during the national anthem to stand at attention to show proper respect for the flag, and those who choose not to stand can stay back in the locker room. And nice milquetoast compromise as the NFL tries to wade its way through this. I guess we're getting into year three now of the anthem protest, if you want to say. I don't think that folks are protesting the anthem. I don't think that the folks who are protesting the flag. They're protesting police brutality. They're protesting racial inequality, among other things. And the NFL has decided, just like other sports leagues have decided, to use the national anthem as a branding opportunity. And when you do that, you give an opportunity for branding, and then you also provide an opportunity for others to make statements as well. And Colin Kaepernick and Eric Reid, among others, blackballed by the NFL for their stance to use the anthem part of the pregame festivities at football games to make political statements. And the NFL seems bound and determined to keep this issue alive, and that's the odd thing. You know, I wrote a column about this today. I left it out there for discussion. Nobody's really jumped in on a discussion point yet. But, you know, why does the NFL continue to make this an issue? And I say that because you could tell me, Chris, the guys making this an issue are the people like Kaepernick and Reed, who don't play in the NFL right now. Kaepernick hasn't had a job for a couple of years now in the NFL. But they're the guys making the issue. It's not the NFL. It's the players who are kneeling or sitting or doing whatever during the anthem, raising their fist up in the air during the anthem, whatever that is. That's who's making the issue here, not the NFL owners. Well, okay, that's fine. 2009 was the year when the NFL changed its policy regarding team personnel being on the field for the national anthem. Now, of course, during the Super Bowl, you know, that's big patriotic moment there. You got to have folks on the field for the national anthem during the Super Bowl. But generally speaking, before that, you know, it was the national anthem was part of the pregame ceremony. Players were back in the locker room. Coaches were talking about, you know, last second strategy. And then they ran out to the tunnel and played football. That happens at college football stadiums across the country on Saturdays. And nothing changed until 2009. And then the NFL, you know, as part of its effort to sell ads in the guise of doing these patriotic displays for the U.S. military, put the players on the field and made them props, basically, for those paid-for displays by the U.S. military honoring veterans. NFL bank, you know, make a buck out of that and require team personnel to be on the field for that. So this isn't a time-honored tradition. Now, the national anthem has been something played before games dating back to baseball World Series back in the, you know, World War I era. So we're talking, you know, a century of that now. It spread to other sports over time and is now an accepted part of pregame festivities here in the States. And then, you know, spread across the world, really. You know, hockey games, talk about the hockey. You won't see it tonight because there's no Canadian team tonight. But, you know, O-Canada being played before national O-Canada national being played before hockey games. And so, yeah, it's something, you know, European soccer, World Cup soccer, it's something that's a tradition now. But we in America, especially we in America with our football, take it to an extreme. And again, it's part of the business. It's not part of just honoring the flag. I mean, it's something that's part and parcel to the branding of the NFL. And so, yeah, you know, I can understand the shield, as the NFL owners like to call themselves, protecting their investments here. But you know, when you open the door that way, you to say we're going to use players as props as part of branding, then that's what creates this opportunity for players to protest racial injustice. And you talk about protesting racial injustice. The story out today, a Milwaukee Bucks rookie guard in a parking violation dispute. He was going to get a parking ticket back in January in Milwaukee and ends up being handcuffed and tased and booked. And the video doesn't look good. You know, he never escalated the situation. Police did. Police chief, mayor apologizing. The lawsuits come. That's one incident of many that you see. This is what folks are protesting. I mean, and unfortunately, the young man didn't die, but many have. And you know, if you want to make players into props for propaganda purposes, some of them are going to say, "Look, I'm going to use this opportunity to get a different kind of propaganda out." Now, the rule that's been put down by the NFL, as you read through it, is not as draconian as it sounds. It's not, oh, well, you know, if they don't stand, they're going to get fined. They couldn't do that because of the collective bargaining agreement between the NFL ownership and the Players Association. They would have had to consult the Players Association. It could go to court if that was the case, if the NFL tried to unilaterally impose workplace rules on the NFLPA without consultation. And so teams can be fined. We've already seen some owners say, you know, owners who ostensibly voted for this measure, say that if any of their players decide they want to protest, they'll pay the fines if there are fines levied. And I think the Jets owner, for example, one of those, Woody Johnson, Donald Trump supporter, interestingly enough, saying he would pay any fines that were levied on players of his team who decided to you know, exercise their freedom of speech to protest during that part of the pregame festivities. And it wouldn't surprise me if other owners wouldn't step up and do the same thing. And, you know, and the NFL admitting in a tacit way that it's about demonstrating to American fans, consumers, that the players aren't unpatriotic, that instead it's more about the right to demonstrate. So, yeah, it's sort of a, you know, one of those things where you could say the NFL's trying to eat its cake and have it too. And you can't do that. All this does really is keep that issue alive in public discourse. And that's the point I made with my column I wrote today, and kind of, I guess, the point I still have to make here on this podcast. Just by the sheer fact that the NFL continues to keep this issue alive is enough to keep it out there in the public domain. And you know, the fact that Colin Kaepernick doesn't have a job, and yet Robert Griffin III has a job as a backup quarterback, among others, many others. There's a bunch of stiffs out there signed as second and third quarterbacks for teams that are nowhere near as talented as Colin Kaepernick. And Eric Reed, still in his prime safety, out of a job, and you know, ostensibly for the next season as well. The fact that those guys don't have jobs because of the role they played in organizing these protests speaks volumes as well. And I'll be honest with you, and you know, you're listening to this, you may have a 180 degree different opinion than I do as far as this goes, but we may end up in the same place. It makes me really question about my commitment to watching the NFL, and I'm in a weird place because I'm a sports writer, sports broadcaster, podcaster, analyst. You know, I've got to keep up with the NFL to some degree professionally, right? To be able to talk about the games and keep, you know, our advertisers happy, our readers happy, that kind of thing. So, you know, that said, I've got to keep up with the sport, but I don't want to. I really want to, you know, to stay away and I don't want to reward the NFL with my viewership, with my dollars, buying jerseys, buying hats, going to games, watching the games on TV, and you know, their advertisers get exposure to me as a result. Because I'm, you know, I really question the I guess I question the future of this game from that standpoint. I mean, if all we're doing is placating Donald Trump and you know, his ability to tweet or not tweet, guess what, NFL? He's going to tweet about you anyway. Because it's your red meat for his base. He's already gotten you to do what you've done here. He's not going to stop now. He's not going to stop until you're done. And of course, you're not going to be done. The NFL is going to be the NFL until concussions and brain injuries and mama's not letting her little boys play football anymore, until that cycle goes through in about 20 years, and then the NFL's gutted of his talent. But until then, the NFL's the NFL. There's all these big stadiums everywhere, these big TV contracts. We still got to sell beer. And so that's a great way to sell beer, is watching football. But, letting Donald Trump play you like that is maybe not the best business decision, and yet that's what we're seeing. And it's frustrating. Yes, I'll continue to consume NFL product because I've kind of got to as a sports broadcaster, but there's a lot of people like me who don't have to, who aren't broadcasters, who don't rely on, you know, keeping up with every little detail of every sport for their living. you know, there's a lot of things you can do on Sundays. More and more folks are actually finding that out. Not to mention that the game, again, outside of just this anthem issue, you've got the issues with health of the players that we're now very well aware of and kind of feel bad about watching them hit each other and for our entertainment. And then the quality of the game itself has deteriorated. I don't argue that it's deteriorated because of the restrictions put in place in terms of the health, though some certainly would. You might, as you're listening out there. But to me, just the whole parity thing, you know, let's make everybody 8-8. That whole movement the last 15, 20 years in terms of scheduling, in terms of everything else, how the game is managed, just made it boring to me. You know, I like rooting for, rooting against great teams. And we don't have any, except for the Patriots, we don't have any established great teams year to year. It kind of goes from year to year in a lot of cases. And it's just hard to really identify with the product as a result. So that all said, you know, the NFL making headlines in a not good way once again. And, you know, it'll be interesting to see. I guess it's, if nothing else, it's May, right? So the, it's mini camp time. We're still a couple of months away from the start of formal training camp in July. Time for this to die down, but it'll flare back up, no question about it. All it'll take is one stupid tweet from the Orange Man, and we'll be talking about whatever he wants us to talk about, because that's what happens in modern-day America. Switching gears, the Caps in Game 7 at Tampa Bay. And I'm not a hockey analyst. I've really become just extremely recent convert to the how interesting the game of hockey is. I decided, for whatever reason, when the playoffs started this year, I'm going to follow the Caps as long as they go. I figured, of course, I'll be honest with you, I figured I'd watch a couple of Caps games in the first round, they'd lose, and then that'd be it. But here they are, Game 7 of the Eastern Conference Finals. And, you know, watching every other night, this Caps team this year outperform its expectations. In many past years, you know, these Caps teams have been the best team in their conference, best team in the whole of hockey, and then flamed out first round, second round, couldn't get to conference finals for 20 years, has been sort of a running joke. And then this year, you know, this team, it's not an upstart team to say anything like that. You still got Ovechkin, you still got a number of guys up and down that lineup. But it's not as deep as in past years. Tampa Bay is the favorite here in the Eastern Conference, and then Vegas is the story of hockey with what it's done the expansion season. The Caps have sort of been, you know, they're not A1. They might not be even in the A section of the newspaper as far as hockey news goes. But they're in Game 7, and And so, yeah, what's interesting to me now, then, I take it as a sports fan of the Washington teams, and then also for my regular listeners out there, you know, we talk an awful lot of University of Virginia sports, of UVA teams. And there's a similarity, I think, one, between the people in the fan bases, but two, also the psychological makeup of the fan bases. If you're listening to this podcast because I put something in the description about the Washington Capitals, you're likely thinking, you know, if I can get this podcast posted before 8 o'clock, you're thinking, yeah, okay, he's right, they're going to lose, because that's just what you're supposed to think. Washington sports fans think that their team is going to lose. UVA sports fans think their team is going to lose. Now, yeah, I know that, you know, one thing that UVA sports fans like to hold over their friends from Virginia Tech is 25 national championships to zero, but no national championships in football, no national championships in men's basketball, women's basketball, only the one in baseball a couple of years ago. A lot of and nothing against them, a lot of championships in sports like soccer and swimming and tennis, lacrosse, that admittedly a lot of you guys don't watch on a regular basis. You only tune in the championship game when UVA's in it, and then you root like hell, like you've been rooting for them all season long. But you don't. So effectively, you know, the expectation of UVA sports fans is that you'll be the number one national seed in the basketball tournament and you'll lose to a 16. Oh, wait, that did happen. Or you'll be number one in the country in football for 3 weeks and you won't be ranked at the end of the season. Oh, wait, that did happen. That's the UVA sports fan psychology. It's similar to the Washington psychology. Now, the Redskins have won Super Bowls, I think it's three. The Redskins from the early 80s to the early 90s, dominant team under Joe Gibbs. But since that 92 Super Bowl, focus, nothing. The Wizards, of course, are just an afterthought, if even that. The Caps, I mentioned, you know, great franchise regular season, terrible franchise postseason. And then you've even got the Washington Nationals. In fact, I've got the Nats game, postgame one right now as I'm recording. Nats lose today to the San Diego Padres 3-1 on getaway day. Take the series 2-3, but lose on getaway day. Good start from Eric Fetty coming up from the minor leagues. The Nationals win in 2012, 2014, 2016, 2017, but can't get past the first round with some really good teams. And you know, I think the expectation of this team right now with a lot of injuries is in fourth place in the NL East, just a couple, three and a half out of first place. Get healthy, this team's going to win again this year. But, you know, you get to October, you know what you're thinking. You're thinking that they're not going to win in October. So I find that fascinating about the fan base. I listened to the Tony Kornheiser podcast today. I listened to actually the last two, yesterday's and today's. Tony Kornheiser, his crew, they're Washington sports people, and same edginess. You know, folks are looking forward to Game 7 here in a few minutes, but they have no expectations. And so so that's, you know, the pressure on the Caps is what it is. You know, and I know there's two schools of thought about pressure on a sports team from fans. You know, the idea is, oh, they don't know that. They're just out there playing the game. You know, and that's what I want to believe. But then I remember reading about the Cubs in 2016 and that team holding the collective psyche of Cubs Nation 110 years or whatever it was, 108 years on their shoulders. And players said that they did feel that pressure as that series with Cleveland went on. They did feel that pressure to not just go out there. Of course, they're out there. They're professionals. They're paid to do a job. They happen to be wearing Cubs uniforms, but they were a hell of a team put together by Theo Epstein, managed by Joe Maddon. But they felt the pressure to go out, in addition to being professionals feeling pressure to win a championship for themselves, for their franchise, for their employers, and that kind of thing. They did feel the pressure of the fan base. And so, you know, none of those guys would admit it. Maybe they'd admit it. I don't know. But you know those guys getting ready to play hockey, and as I'm recording, it's 45 minutes from now. You know they feel that pressure, and it's not just – in this case, it's not just the pressure of Caps fans. It's the pressure of DC fans. The 1992 Super Bowl is the last championship that Washington sports fans have had, and that's – you know, the Washington Washington sports fan base is pretty good. I mean, it's an active fan base. You know, Redskins have been terrible under Daniel Snyder, deservedly so. Daniel Snyder, until he gets rid of the team, and he's not going to, the Skins are not going to win under Daniel Snyder. The Nats are a different beast. Yeah, the Nats of the Caps are very similar, in my opinion. Very talented teams. I think they're well-run organizations, just snake-bit in the playoffs. Just bad luck in the playoffs. Last 2 years for the Nats, last several years for the Caps. But they're a well-run organization that just have had – they feel like, to me, now, you know, putting my UVA sports fan cap on, they feel to me like those last few UVA basketball teams. The team in 2016, Elite Eight, 15-point lead, 10 minutes ago, can't hold the lead, lose to Syracuse, a team that shouldn't have even been in the tournament, get to the Final Four. This year, losing to Maryland, Baltimore County by 20 points. Not just losing to a 16, but getting blown out by a 16 after going 31-2 in the regular season, winning the ACC with a 20-1 record. You know, it's that. So, the Caps have, you know, they've got the ghost of hockey fans and all that, and they've got the expectations of sports fans of an entire major metropolitan area on their backs today. So fun stuff as far as that goes. I'm looking forward to that. It's getting close to 40 minutes away from the drop of the puck there. A couple quick updates. VMI Baseball loses today. 19-0 to Mercer. That's, you know, losing is... Josh Winder gets a start. He gets knocked out after 3 2/3, I think it was. Gave up 6 runs. And VMI falls to the loser's bracket of the SoCon tournament. And you hear the disappointment in my voice. I thought this VMI team, all season long, I thought, you know, they were just a play or two away from, you know, being a team that could very well be an NCAA tournament team. Winder and Peyton Maddox, the catcher, and Colin Fleischer, the first baseman DH, and Matt Pita, the right fielder. Nathan Eaton, third baseman, closer. You know, it's a team with a lot of talent, but they lose today 19-0. They're in a loser's bracket now, so things aren't over. It's a double elimination tournament, and, you know, life goes on. But they were the 4 seed, so they play the loser of the 1-9 game, and it just happened to be the one. UNC Greensboro, UNCG. 18-3 in the regular season in SoCon play, loses 10-2 to Western Carolina, who was 6-40 heading into this week down in Greenville, South Carolina. Oh my goodness. So now VMI's got an elimination game with UNCG team that, for all of its pedigree this season, you know, I think it's 41 wins on the regular season for UNCG. If they don't win the SoCon tournament, they're not going to the NCAA tournament. So great season for UNCG, and now backs against the wall. You got two really good teams going at it tomorrow in the loser's bracket. And, you know, when you are in a double elimination tournament and you're in the loser's bracket, they think they're really tough for you. You're pitching, you know, you end up needing to win an extra game as a result of having that early loss. Just to get to the championship, you got to, you know, beat the team in the winner's bracket twice. I mean, it throws your pitching completely off at this stage. You know, VMI's got, they've got, you know, outside of Winder, 3 more guys who've started consistently for this team this year. But, you know, to get through all the way, if they get past UNCG, to get all the way to a championship, they're going to need to have a couple of Johnny Allstaff days. So it's a tough situation there. Other baseball news, college baseball news, UVA's baseball season already over, effectively. They got one more game tomorrow in the ACC Baseball Championship against NC State. But with the loss yesterday in 11 innings to Florida State, 3-2, walk-off hit for Florida State to win that game, that ends UVA season. The way pool play is in the ACC tournament, they don't do a double elimination like Southern Conference and other conferences, a lot of other conferences do. The ACC has 12 teams in this tournament. It's not really a tournament. It's 4 3-team pods. You're guaranteed 2 games in those pods, and if there's a tie, then the highest seed actually advances to the bracket, then to the semifinal final bracket. And UVA losing yesterday, the best they can do is 1-1. If everybody's 1-1, NC State would actually get the advance to the semifinal. So UVA losing to Florida State ends their season, and it's the first time in Brian O'Connor's 15 seasons he will not coach a team in the NCAA tournament. He coached his first team in the NCAA tournament after at a Virginia for a Virginia program that just a couple years before he got there had thought seriously about. Had, in fact, there was a recommendation to kill that program. He took the program his first season to the NCAA tournament. He's been back every year since 2015, of course, won the national championship. This year, first time ever, Brian O'Connor not going to be coaching in an NCAA tournament. And so, yeah, rebuilding job at Virginia, especially because you're going to lose Daniel Lynch most likely to the draft. That's the, your one of your top starting pitchers. Jake McCarthy, I assume, even with his injury-riddled season, will be a high draft pick. The preseason All-America outfielder, he didn't get to play a lot this year, and he wasn't effective when he tried to come back late in the season. Among others that UVA will lose from this year's team that underperformed. Just put it the way it is, underperformed. Opening up a brand new stadium, Disharoon Park, Davenport Field, $18 million renovation. Didn't play good baseball all season long, and season's over now for the Cavs. They do play one more game, so I say season's over. They do have the one more game tomorrow, NC State, but it really doesn't mean anything. I'm not looking at the result today, NC State, Florida State. No matter what happens today in that game, the UVA game with NC State means nothing to either team. It's just a game at this stage. So the Cavs playing out their string. Keydets have a chance. Let's see if they can do it. See if they can, you know, keep their season alive. I would love to feel like I know something about baseball. I've been saying since the end of last season I thought this team had a chance to do something special. And I guess finishing fourth in the SoCon this year after the first 2 years back in the SoCon, playing in that play-in game, the 8-9 game, just advancing to the main draw was a improvement. Finishing 12-12 and SoCon play was a big improvement for this program. Jonathan Hadra has really got things turned around in the right direction. But, yeah, I'd like to see it extend a little bit longer. We'll see if the Keydets can do so. So I think that'll wrap us up. We'll try to get Scott German on the line tomorrow for our big debate on the DH in associated topics within baseball, how we can improve the game. That's coming up tomorrow here on our podcast. Until then, we'll sign off, as I do every podcast. Here's how we go. Wahoo-wah.